And away we go here on WWGH Radio, Thursday, September the 19th, 2019. You know, I just glanced over at the clock a few seconds before we went on the air here this morning. It is September 19th, 2019, which means the date is 9/19/19. How about that? Special day here. 9/19/19. I don't think we've had anything like this since September 9th, 1999, which of course was 9/9/99. But interesting day, 9/19/19, which also is part of the backwards forwards date being the same as the backwards date. If you look at the clock backwards, it's the same as the clock forwards. Pantomime week, I think, is what that's called. So 9/19/19 is the date, but backwards it's 9/19/19. So pantomime time continues. I wonder what causes a pantomime time in history. But in any event, 15 minutes past the hour here, and we've got a lot to cover today, because yesterday on this program, we got into a very interesting conversation about food in Marion, Ohio, and the yesteryear of it. And we've had you on the toll-free line this week, 740-383-9944, filling in gaps and telling us things that you heard. And that's really how I like to do a radio show, and we've had tremendous fun with that this week. And as long as people keep calling in, we will keep doing that. So I hope you keep calling in and giving information. And remember, this is not factual to the degree that if you heard it from your grandma or you heard it from your grandpa or you heard it from your aunt or your uncle or a neighbor or somebody like that, you can call in and give us that information and we'll hash it out, because it might trigger something in somebody else's mind, and that's how we get to the truth of the matter in the end. Like yesterday was a great day, because one of the things we talked about yesterday was the Red Apple Grill, which used to be located near the railroad tracks on North Main Street. And I'd even heard for years that the reason the Red Apple Grill closed, we learned that it was 1961 that it closed, was because there was a train that was coming through Marion, a circus train, and one of the elephants had gotten loose and destroyed the Red Apple Grill. Well, that had always been the story that I had heard. Now, over the course of the morning yesterday, somebody called in and said they had heard that that elephant was actually deemed crazy, and they euthanized the elephant. They killed the elephant and buried it somewhere here in Marion. And then we had another call in yesterday who said that a few years ago they had found these big bones here in Marion, and they thought they might be part of that elephant. And as the morning went on, we just kept learning a lot more information about the Red Apple. Go ahead, caller.
You're off the air.
Oh, I'm off the air?
You're off the air. I can't get you on my radio, or I can't get you on iHeartRadio.
Let me check here and see what might be going on, and I will get back with you.
Okey-doke.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to figure out this problem and be back with you momentarily here on WWGH Radio 7.FM. Wonder what happened there. It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio from 12:10 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them. They have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess.
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean. Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Yes. Doesn't it just? I never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
All right, I think we're here on the air. I think the problem has been fixed, I hope, here. Let's see. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scott, you were up here there for a while?
Yeah.
I don't know what's playing now. Something's sticking on there. Are you at a commercial or something?
Yeah, we went to a commercial because we were off the air, but are we back up on the air now?
Yeah, I got you on there. I guess it's on a commercial or whatever right now.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me know if we happen to go out again.
All right, I will.
Okay, bye-bye.
All
right, I think we're back up on the air now. I don't know what that glitch was, but apparently it has been fixed, which is a good thing. So here we go. Telephone line is open, 740-383-9944. And we can talk about whatever you would like this morning, as we talked yesterday about the Red Apple Restaurant being destroyed by the elephant, which, let me see here, trying to figure out what that problem was. Isn't it interesting to do this on live air? Now, let me know if we happen to go down again, because we certainly do not want that problem again. You know what I am going to do is I'm going to play something I wanted to play yesterday, so we're going to get this out of the way here today. This actually is from the early 1960s. The voice you're about to hear is that of Bob Mason. Bob Mason was the founder of radio station WMRN and really the founder of Marion Radio, as it was, Marion Broadcasting. Now, this is what Bob Mason thought of what broadcasting should be in Marion. Let's take a listen to this while we make sure the problems are all worked out this morning.
Yesterday, 11:55 a.m., when WMRN Farm Director Chuck Evers was in search of...
Oh, wait, that's not the right... Here it is, Bob Mason.
2 o'clock. December 23rd, 1940, before Pearl Harbor, before building of the Scioto Ordnance Plant, before Marion Engineer Depot, before Marion launched on a program of rebirth and rebuilding. 20 years ago, a new voice of progress appeared upon the scene, a voice dedicated to public service and community progress, a radio station which in the past 2 decades has become an integral part of community life. A medium of news for local as well as regional, state, national, and international events. A medium for education through public forums, through cooperation with schools, colleges, and universities. A medium for entertainment and music, from grand opera to folk song. A trading post for merchandise. A sports reporter from the scenes of high school and college basketball and football. While other electronic media have emphasized rock and roll or frantic and frenzied broadcasting, it has been the unswerving policy of this station to render only such substantial and intimate service as could be obtained from no other source, even to recovery of lost pets or people.
All right, and we are back here on WWGH Radio. Again, that was the voice of Bob Mason, the creator of broadcasting in Marion back on December 23rd, 1940. Now, this morning we're going to do something fun. We haven't had a chance to do this in the past couple weeks, so we're going to do it this hour. We're going to do it via telephone with the pastor of Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio, our very own Steve Whitaker, which, remember, his show, The Pastor Spot, can be heard on Tuesdays live, 5:10 to 6 p.m., Wednesdays 3:10 to 4 p.m., and Sundays 8:10 until 9 a.m. Pastor, how are you?
I've been doing pretty good. Had kind of a busy week. Most of my grandchildren and a lot of friends were, their kids were showing livestock and different projects at the Delaware County Fair. So I've been kind of there all week. It's been a really good time.
You know, it's a great time of year, this time of year, because we have these cooler mornings and we have warmer afternoons. And it's interesting because, you know, we always hear this term Indian summer. And a lot of people use this weather that we're having as a term. It's Indian summer. I did not know what Indian summer was until about 2 days ago.
Well, what is that?
Well, what has to happen is, for there to be an Indian summer, there has to be a frost. And then once the frost happens, after the first frost, if you're still having warm temperatures in the afternoon, that's what they call an Indian summer. So we can't be in that yet because we haven't had a frost yet.
Okay, well, that makes sense, and I did not know that was a definition. You know, I wonder how it ever got the name Indian summer.
You know, I don't know. I bet it had something to do with the Native Americans, and that after the first frost, that warm weather would come back up because they lived outside in probably pretty harsh conditions if they lived in this area in the winter, and probably had something to do with working crops, gardens, which
harvest,
is...
harvest, I would suppose.
Yeah, how they ate.
You know, what's kind of nice is that when there is that first frost, it sends everything into dying into harvest mode, like the beans and the corn and those kind of things. It speeds up that process. And then, of course, if it warms up, they have nice weather to get in the field and get work done.
Yeah,
that's interesting, isn't it?
Well, it is, because I think this time of year becomes so important, and as we talked about early on in the summer, we were all pretty worried about the farmers because of all the rain we were getting.
Yeah, and you know, the crops are so resilient anymore, and I think a lot of that, well, I know a lot of it has to do with, you know, the hybrid seeds they use. It's really amazing. Years ago, they used what they call open pollinated seed. And it was generally pretty much all of pretty much the same thing, maybe some different varieties. But now they have seeds that are drought resistant. They have seeds that are mold resistant for when it's wet. They have, of course, they've had this for a while, but they have seed that is a short crop, seed that is a longer crop. And these guys can kind of custom tailor their seed. I know sometimes halfway through a planting season, the weather situation will change, and farmers will take back many bags of seed and replace them with a different seed that will more suit what it's doing outside. So because of that, those plants seem to make it no matter what happens. And the farmers that were able to get their crops in this year, if they got them in, their crops aren't looking too bad.
No, they're not looking too bad, and it seems like everything worked its way out, and I think we're going to be okay.
Usually does. Just about everything usually works its way out, doesn't it?
It seems that way. It might take a little bit of time, but I think eventually we get there.
Yes, we do. Well, we're getting ready to go into a fall. I guess it's time to start preparing, as I say, to batten the hatches. Get ready for winter in Ohio. You know, get those plants covered up and make sure that we've got plenty of mulch around our more fragile plantings and that type of thing.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, and I know a lot of people are even thinking about weatherization at this point, about putting plastic on their windows and just making sure all the preparations are made, bringing in some of the things you have outside furniture-wise in the summer that you might not use in October, November, or December. And it's a fun time of year to watch that happen.
Yes, it is. And, you know, one thing I might, well, you mentioned home weatherization and covering windows and whatnot. If you meet a certain income guideline, they will actually come out to your house. There's a program that will do that. They can come out, they'll come out to your house, and they will plastic windows. They'll put insulation around things, and they will actually make your house much more weather tight.
They will.
It doesn't cost anything.
They will, and that's interesting because there are so many of these groups and so many of these programs, and I've always said this, that I'm not sure people are aware and can take advantage of, and a lot of these groups are just waiting for people to call for them to go out and do these deeds.
Yeah, I know with the Red Cross does a smoke alarm program that literally anyone can call, and it's not even income-based. And they will come out and they'll survey your house inside where you need them, and they will put the proper amount of smoke alarms up, and they're a 10-year no-touch alarm. They are battery, but it's a 10-year. If you try to change the battery, you'll ruin the alarm. But the alarm is good for 10 years, and at the end of the 10 years, you can call them, and they'll come out and switch it out. It doesn't cost you a thing, and you can have a smoke alarm in your house.
Well, that's a great thing because smoke alarms are very, very important, and I guess until you have a fire, and especially have a fire in the middle of the night when you might be asleep, you don't realize how much time that can save you, and it really might be the difference between life and death.
Absolutely. You know, that's interesting. There's two programs we just mentioned. One would be the home weatherization, which will drastically save on heating bills and keep the drafts out. The second one is one that can save your lives. And neither one of those programs has one dime out of pocket if you contact them and want them to do it.
Well, that's the thing. And again, I think it just comes down to, do people know that these programs exist? Some people do, some people don't. And I guess it's one of those things that travels by word of mouth.
It does, but you know, if you contact the city of Marion or Marion County, they actually have a booklet type thing they put out. It's several pages that are in a little binder, almost like a calendar. But it has every agency and everything listed and its phone number in that. And if you couldn't pick it up, I'm sure somebody would be glad to send it to you.
Oh, absolutely. And there used to be a number you could call, too, that was just a number on your phone. If you would hit #1 or something like that, it would bring up an operator who would tell you where to go for these events. But I can't remember what that number is.
I can't either. I know we keep a stack of those in at the church at Community Christian for people that come in if they need them. And it's a quick resource, and I don't know, it amazes me. When I was talking to the guys at the Red Cross last about the smoke alarm thing, they were telling me that people don't call in, and I just don't understand that. I guess maybe it's just one more thing they think they have to do or don't want to do. But, you know, when it comes to keeping my children or my grandchildren or any children or elderly people safe, man, do it, you know. Another one that you know is available to so many seniors is Meals on Wheels. And, you know, to take advantage of that and make sure they have something to eat. But, you know, it's really interesting. There just are so many things out there that are there to because people care about you. And I don't know why people don't take more advantage of them. And sometimes they don't know. I think that sometimes also, with elderly people especially, it's very common that they're afraid to have people come in their house, whether it be a safety issue or whether it be a issue of they stop trusting people as much as they get older because they feel vulnerable. makes sense.
I think that's right, and it's also interesting to me, and I learned this so many times, there are a lot of senior citizens who either don't have any family members around for maybe the fact that they have all passed away, or they don't live in the area, or they just don't see them, and they don't get out as much as they used to. And a lot of people don't get the local paper anymore, so they really are shut off from hearing of these things and asking for help and being in a community, maybe a work environment, where they can learn of these things.
I think so. You know, something that leads me into another thought, something maybe we can talk about a minute. I'm actually going to give away my, by saying this, what my message is going to be about on Sunday. Something that's been kind of a burden on my heart lately, and I think it's due to some people I've seen going through some things, some elderly people. You know, in throughout history, and you can study just about any civilization throughout history, and they honor their older people, they look to them for wisdom, and they took care of them when they no longer were able to take care of themselves. They remained an intricate part of the family. If you look at the Amish families, they had what they called the Doty House, which was that little tiny house that was attached to the regular house. And that's where the parents lived when they got older. And then as they passed on, the children that were in the big house, you know, eventually they'd be the ones in that part of the house. But they stayed around to be an intricate part of the family too. Help cook, be active in the children's lives, and pass on whatever wisdom they had, and it was just a very, they still felt needed. But, you know, in most cultures, you know, I know that even the Native American culture honored their elderly a lot. But today, and it's happened over the last couple generations, it appears to me that, especially with the massive amount of care facilities we have, and in-home health care, and all these things. A lot of times people want to blame it on the baby boomer generation, but I don't think that's all the whole picture. I think a lot of the picture is today, more younger people are walking away from their responsibilities to their parents, and they're looking to their parents for what can I get from them versus, okay, they took care of me and raised me. Now it's my turn to help them in their elderly years. What's your thought on that, Scott?
Well, I think that's probably right to a certain degree. Although one thing I saw with the baby boomer generation, and it covers a large span of people, and I never saw this really at any other time in history. If you go back through books or even television series or whatever was going on, there started to be this thing with the baby boomer generation, and maybe it was because of the 60s, and maybe it was because of rebellion and things that were going on a little differently than had been prior to that. But it seemed to me, and I think this rubs off, because who do we learn from? We learn from our parents in a lot of cases. The baby boomer generation, from the time they were 18 and sometimes even a little younger, were a little dismissive of their parents. I mean, their parents listened to Glenn Miller and they listened to Jimi Hendrix. It was a big gap. And one thing that I have seen is, and as the baby boomer generation gets older, because now the baby boomers are retiring and 50s and 60 year old, if their parents are still alive in their 80s or 90s, they almost come dismissive of them. I've never heard so much apologizing for people's parents. And pay attention to this at the holidays this year, because this is where I see it more than anything else. You know, the parent is now elderly. They're 80 or 90 years old, and they'll be together with the family on Thanksgiving or Christmas. And the daughter or son, who is now 50 or 60 years old, a lot of time will go, you know, oh, mom or dad, that's not how it was, or, you know,
or you know, just don't pay attention to them.
Yeah, I hear that all, and I had never heard that from a generation until the baby boom generation.
Well, you know, we've always had a generation gap, but I think you're right, and I think that what we saw was a whole paradigm shift versus a generation gap. The whole thinking process, you're right, it was that generation that began, excuse me, the dismissiveness of parents. And, you know, kids are great to sit back and wait on an inheritance, but they don't want to be bothered with the parents that are going to leave them the inheritance. you know, that's, of course, you know when we're talking, and I want to make this clear that I'm sure Scott feels the same way. We're not painting with a total broad brush here. There are some families that are very close, but it's talking about more of a common thing that we are seeing in a lot of people.
Well,
there are those families that are still close and that aren't that way, but yeah, you know, I think you're right. There just really was, and it follows through. If you look at Hollywood and you look at, you know, television, you'll see that, you know, older people are not held up in regard as they were in the early movies, as being important or wise, or they almost are sometimes goofy or buffoon or doing something, you know, like, oh brother, and I, something you'd roll your eyes at and laugh, or, you know, there just is that thought process.
Oh, you're exactly right. And I think, in a way, what you're talking about, the generation that came after the baby boomers, yeah, I've seen more of that generation call their parents up and say, you know, can I borrow money? Can I do this? Can I do that? But I think the baby boomer generation, that's their age gap with their kids, because they were so against asking their parents for anything, because there was this great rebellion, and also their parents had grown up during the Depression, so a lot of them didn't have a whole lot.
And they wouldn't give it, in many cases, there used to be a thought process that the best thing that I can teach you is to how to stand on your own two feet. And to make your own way. I pulled myself up by my bootstraps, and you need to learn to do the same, and all those little phrases and whatnot. But I think with the baby boomer generation, they began to give their kids the things they didn't have. And they wanted their kids to feel like, they just wanted them to feel the way they had wished they felt. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I, you know, generations are an interesting thing to talk about, because I think that in some strange way, that is, because you hear this an awful lot too. You hear, well, I would have never done that with my parents. Well,
yes, you do hear that a lot.
Yeah, but you know what? Everything is situational, because if you look at times, as I just said, the generation prior to the baby boomers grew up in the Depression, grew up in World War II, had rations. The baby boomer generation never experienced that as adults, so they didn't have that frame of reference. And then the generation now is so far removed from that, they never saw their parents have a big struggle unless their parents, you know, got into trouble, which people do from time to time financially. So I think that's why they're more apt to go back to their parents and ask for things, because they had a good childhood. Their parents were not destitute like the grandparents were in the Depression or World War II. I think it's just what you see when you grow up.
You're right. And I just heard this recently, within the last 6 months, a fellow talking about the current generation and their thought process, and they say, he said the millennials are the first generation that have never known want. Now, I understand there are people that are very poor in bad situations out there, but as far as a whole in the United States, this is the first generation that hasn't seen the Depression or hasn't seen real difficulty. And they've been able to get whatever they've been able to get things, even if they're on a very low economic situation. We have lunch, we have food at school, we have phones, internet access, all those things, just like we mentioned some of the stuff with, you know, that you can get to help with your house and whatnot. This is a generation that has never known what it truly means to go hungry and not know, have any idea where to go as a whole. And because of that, they don't recognize the fact that that fact of what it's really like to struggle. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, and I don't know. See, the big question that comes up, I don't know if that's a bad thing, because the Depression and World War II were such isolated moments in history, much like the culture of the 60s and the 70s, an isolated time, that caused things to be different. And I'm not sure that it's so... You know what's funny? I guess this is why I'm saying this. Because a parent will always say, you know, you can come to me with anything. If you are close with your kids, you are never going to want to see them homeless. You're never going to want to see them not have enough food. You know, the essentials of life. You can come to me with any problem, but then turn around and really not like the idea that they actually come to you with those problems.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some things like, I will agree with what you said. You said you don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Tough times make tough people. You've heard that before. But none of us want our children to go through tough times. I don't. I don't want to see my kids hungry or go without. Or I'm glad that I raised my kids where my kids were never spoiled, but my kids never knew what it was like to go 3 days and literally not have any food in the house. And that has happened before. And I don't want them. I'm glad they didn't, and I don't want them to go through that. I think, though, one thing that is a little bit different today that I see it on a huge scale is that so many parents just it's an automatic when the kids want something. You know, I've talked to, being living in a farm community, you talk to farmers, and of course we do, my family does some of that too, but you know, they had to, you see these big round bales everywhere of hay out in the fields. You see that way more than you see the square ones anymore. They had to go to round bales because they couldn't get kids to help bale hay anymore. And just about every kid I knew at some point growing up, you know, worked for anywhere. I've heard it ranged from 15 cents up to 50 cents an hour to $2 and on up. I mean, when I was young, we were given 15 cents an hour by a farmer to help him stack straw. But the point being that kids now, when they want to go to a mall or buy things, their parents just take them or they give them the money and they go. Versus, man, you didn't get any money when I was growing up unless you worked for it. And I think that was a good thing.
Well, you know, there's something that triggered something in my mind, because there's a hypocritical nature in a way about this whole thing, because I'm trying to think of how to tell this story without, you know, saying who it was, but it's a true story. So I guess the point is, there was somebody who I knew who was probably in their 30s now, but has never really worked what we would call a service job. You know, they have never worked in a factory. They've never worked in a retail store. They've never worked in a food place. And for the most part, have always lived at home, and the parents have essentially taken care of that person, but the theory always was they are so talented, and they just think differently, and we want them to be able to express that, and that's the choice the parents made, and if the parents aren't unhappy with that, I guess that's okay, but for other people to be happy with that and say that's okay, but then turn around to their kids and say, wait a second, the fact that you are doing something that pays less money and you can't stand on your own two feet because of that choice is a sign of your weakness or my failure as a parent. I don't know if that's really true, to be honest with you, because if a parent died, God forbid, I don't think those people all of a sudden would roll up in a ball and die.
No, I think that, you know, everything, like you said a few minutes ago, is so situational. With different kids, with different, you know, you may have, for instance, you may have a person that is, has Asperger's syndrome, is autistic in that way. And they may have parents that say, you know, they can never function on their own. You know, I've got to take care of them. And they keep them at home and let them express themselves. You may have another parent that says, you know what, it's my goal to see them be independent. And you may have two people that are struggling with the same situation, but it just depends on the family. Now, I'm not saying that either one's right or wrong. I'm just saying that, you know, all those things are different. But I do think that for the fact of personal self-worth and feeling like you have purpose, that we need to try to make sure that as we raise young people, we help them find their potential in doing something that is productive.
Well, you know where I see this. The perfect example, I guess the clearest example that I can think of. A lot of people in life have a dream at some point of being an entrepreneur. They don't want to work for somebody else.
I know I did.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody does at some point. And a lot of people do follow through with that. And a lot of times, that is the time in your life where you are going to make the least money because you're trying to build a business. You are the chief of that, and that takes a lot of time. And some people stick with it, and some people decide, I'd rather do something different. And both of those are okay. But because that person has made that choice in their life where maybe they're not making as much money as they could, it doesn't mean that if they needed to go to another career and make that money, they couldn't. They're just making that choice at this point.
Oh, correct. You know, there's nothing that drains you quicker than deciding to work for yourself, because you're going to pour everything back into it. It takes a while to get on your feet. And you know, I always think that it's funny when you are in business for yourself. People always think, oh, you're doing great, you got your own company. And what they don't understand, I know in my particular case, years ago, I had a construction business for years. And I would pay guys on a weekend, and many times, you know, I would be dead broke till the next check came in. I mean, literally broke, because I paid those guys. But I had to pay them. And, you know, they'd come back in on Monday, and they'd have a couple of them maybe have a hard weekend of blowing money and having a good time, and they'd come in on Monday and say, hey, you got any, I'm broke, do you have any money for lunch? And I say, you know what, I didn't even have money for lunch on Friday.
So, right, and yeah, I think that's not understood in a lot of ways.
I don't think it is either. The stress of running a business and keeping bills paid it's real.
Absolutely.
And, I don't think people see that. That, you know, people would talk about how much it costs to do things. If they would see what it costs for insurances and bonds and all those things that are out there, advertising, you know, that stuff just isn't cheap.
No, it's not, and I think, again, that becomes that's a big generational thing, too. And I'm not saying the generation prior to the baby boom generation didn't do this, but after World War II, there were a lot of good jobs where people could work for other people, and they chose to do that. There was not a whole lot of people going into business for themselves, and if they did, they still could, because the box stores hadn't come in, the corporate America had not come in that way yet. So it was just a different time. But when the baby boom generation came, they said, boy, I watched my dad work in a factory for 30 years, And he was
I'm
so happy.
Doing that.
Yeah, and I'm not going to do that. He was so happy the day he got to walk out of there.
You know, it's funny. You bring up memories in my mind saying that of families I knew growing up, and most of my friends, their parents worked at a company. What's your dad do? Well, he works at International Harvester. You know, what's your dad do? Well, my dad works at GM, or my dad works at Westinghouse, or I know, you know, those kind of places. And when you work there, that's just what you did. And it's always what you did, and that never changed. And it was interesting. You'd work there 30 or 40 years or whatever, and you'd retire, and if you were lucky, you'd get a cheap gold-plated watch, and they'd send you on your way. But, you know, I think even during that time, there's two things that were different. People were, that generation was so glad to have that job because they'd gone through the Depression. And to have that steady income, they didn't want to rock the boat and go out and look for something that paid better or keep reaching. They were happy just to know, look, I've got a safe house. I know what my bills are. I can feed my family. We lived in some track houses when I was a kid, excuse me, in Hilliard. And they were all built the same. They were built by U.S. Steel. U.S. Steel put a build them in, and then John Galbraith Company, it was one of his plans in Hilliard, and they were all put on slabs. They had three bedrooms, a kitchen, a dinette, and a living room. That was it, one bath. And they built them all, housing and developments all over the place like this and all over the country. And those were the families and the people that were built in the late 50s, early mid to late 50s. And those were the people that worked in those factories that were all, you know, post-war, post-depression. They worked in those factories. They raised their families, and they were happy. They'd raised five and six kids in those little three-bedroom, you know, one-story slab houses and were happy because they had a house, they had a job, they had food, they had a car, and everything was just hunky-dory. And, you know, the next generation comes along, our generation, my generation, and say, man, there's no way, man. There's got to be something better than this.
Well, and it's a funny thing, too, in a way, and I don't know if people think about this, and this is a long pass to throw with about 4 minutes left in the program, but it's interesting to me because if you go to the generation prior to the World War II generation, which is still with us, their parents didn't live a long time. The life expectancy back in those days was 50, 60, 70 years old if you were lucky. And so the World War II generation did not see to get, they weren't with their parents for a long time in adulthood. So they had no chance to lean on them really in that way. And then the baby boom generation, which is the first generation who's really had their parents for a long, long time, well into adulthood, sometimes into their senior citizen years, it's the first time it's ever happened. So they're becoming, I think that's maybe where that dismissiveness comes from, because they think, well, I'm the grandparent in my family now, but yet my mom and dad is still alive. And then you've got this generation that follows the baby boom, and they're saying, well, man, I've had my grandparents around well into adulthood, so I think it's okay to ask my parents for things. It's really the first time any of this has ever happened.
That's very true, very true. But I'll tell you, we still got to all love our parents, love our families, and spend as much time with them. I've never done a funeral that I didn't hear people say, I wish I'd spent more time with them. And so with that being said and knowing that, it maybe we need to just think of, maybe this, the purpose of this show today is somebody out there needed to hear it so they go visit mom or dad. And that would be a wonderful thing. Or mom and dad, maybe you need to go visit a child you haven't seen in a long time.
Well, you know, it's been a fascinating show today for that reason, because this is a subject. But you know what's interesting, too? I also think, and I hope they do visit, because time is very precious, but it's one of those things, I think that is, I always wish I could have done more. I think if you live with your elderly parent or grandparent, you always want more. You never feel, you never feel like there was enough time. And sometimes the time you spent together, you know how many parents I've heard recently, or kids whose parents have passed away, say, I never ask them this. I never asked them about their wartime. I never asked them what it was like in their childhood. I never asked them what they were like in high school. Were they in any clubs or before they knew them?
You know, real quickly, you mentioned that. I want to put a plug out there. There's a book, several different books you can buy that say, you know, this is my story, my grandma, and it gives you prompts. And you can give that to your parent, your grandparent, and it'll say, when was your first day, or where were you born, a first date, school, all through it. And they can just go through and it'll prompt them all the way through. And that's a great legacy gift to leave to your family.
Absolutely. Pastor, we've hit the wall here, but tell people where they can come find you and come to church on Sunday morning.
We are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Again, that's Community Christian Fellowship. We're at the corner of Water and East Street. And our phone number there is 740-494-2222 if you want to give us a call. Service time is at 10:30, but Bible study is at 9:30. But love to have you come. Scott, thank you. It's been a great show and always great to talk with you.
Yeah, Pastor, it's always a pleasure. You're always welcome, and I look forward to the continued conversation. Stay well.
You too.
Bye-bye. Pastor Steve Whitaker will be back after the break with more Marian History. Stay tuned.
And tabloid, and I think those are the same. Thou shalt not, better ever, never hurt. If you gave, never fought, and it only things were.